You're locked on The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Big Show's in hour number two. If you missed anything from hour one, don't forget you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcast: Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Full game one breakdown of what we saw last night in terms of that absolute drunk game. 9-6, Flames win over the Oilers to take a 1-0 series lead. Game two goes tomorrow. All kinds of Flames and Oilers conversation in hour one with Peter Labardius. Plus some thoughts on those that are upset about Brady Tkachuk celebrating his brother in the stands. Hour two, we got lots to discuss and comb over here in hour two. Don't forget, coming up at the bottom of the hour, be listening as we will give you a code word so you got a chance to win your way into the Saddle Dome for game two on Friday night, 8:30 puck drop. We've got two lower bowl seats up for grabs. We'll give you a code word just after 2:30 in our next segment. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. Right now, down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline we go, away from hockey for a little bit. It's our CFL insider from Three Down Nation. Friend of the program, Justin Dunk, joins us right now on the phone line. Mr. Dunk, how are you, sir?
Doing well, buddy. How was your trip to Hawaii?
It was outstanding, and arrived back just in time to watch a football game last night. So it was good.
9-6, bunch of field goals, eh?
Yeah, it was funny to listen to Chris Cuthbert say the Stampeders have missed the convert. The Elks have two field goals. It was pretty good. I think Cuthbert misses his CFL days, but no, it was. It was awesome, and I don't think we'll see that again in the series, but you leave, and the hockey games get insane. So that's, I guess, maybe your fault for 16 goals or 15 goals last night.
Hey, I'll take the blame. That's cool. People like fire wagon hockey out there, I'm sure.
That's right. It's like beer league. It's perfect. How are you doing, pal?
Doing well, man. Just enjoying some time in Southern California, my dude.
That's awesome, and I'm sure you're happy that you do not have to really, I guess, go in depth as to why there's a labor strike in the CFL. As they come to an agreement and find a deal late yesterday, just, I guess, in terms of this deal, when we talked to you, I think it was even 2 weeks ago, you'd mentioned that you weren't really overly concerned this thing was going to be, pushed into training camp and result in delays. So now that it's kind of in the past and it's been agreed to, are you at all surprised by the timing, or is this exactly kind of how you thought it would shake down?
It's more around what I thought would happen in terms of this process, because when I had talked to you, I felt like there was some progress, and that was before the talks broke off and things got heated and did their thing in the media, and they lost that first piece, the league did, and that set the tone for the players getting a better deal. So I actually think this time around the players played it really well. I expected there to be a delay to training camps outside of Alberta, of course.
Now, in terms of this deal, a lot of your colleagues and those who cover this league on a day-to-day basis, a lot of talk about the fact that this is maybe the best CBA deal in a long time for the players, but also good for the league at the same time. Where are you at in terms of some of the particulars in this deal? Would you agree to that narrative in terms of it being the best it's been in a while for the players?
Until I see the complete document, then I don't want to make any judgment, but I definitely think it is a more fair deal for the players, and it's one that the league needed to make in terms of trying to treat them better, to be quite honest. They talk about it in the public all the time, but when it comes down to these bargaining table negotiations, and why I thought it was going to go differently this time around was because Solomon Alamimian wasn't going to be pushed around. Usually you see the league make what they call their final offer, you know, hours before the deadline, and the players accept and they go to training camp. But this time, I believe Alamimian knew going into these negotiations that he had to be willing to strike and miss training camp time for at least 7 of the 9 teams to get a better, more fair deal for the players. And that seems to be what they agreed to here. Now we'll see when the numbers come out and the money's going to be what it's judged off the most, ultimately, if the players did get the best deal ever for themselves.
JD, I'm just curious if you could explain to our listeners best as you can the changes that are being made to the ratio for next season.
Yeah, so essentially what they're doing is they're introducing a naturalized Canadian, which is really just an American who's played in the league for, you know, a set number of years. What they want to do with that new spot is ideally have player movement be less. They don't want to see as many players swapping teams after 1 year contracts. Now, I don't think it's as much of an issue as people make it out to be, because in football, you can get cut and released in a second anyways, and the contract doesn't really matter. So as soon as production dips, then you're going to see a guy go to a new team because he still wants to try to play football if he can get a contract offer, that is. So that's really the main part in terms of the ratio. But again, until we see the fine print and how this is going to be played out in the games, then we'll understand the real impact on the ratio, and does it actually become a smaller amount of true Canadians that were born and raised in Canada or had Canadian citizenship, how much they play on the field.
How big of a sticking point was revenue sharing for both sides in this?
It was major. The revenue sharing had been talked about throughout the CBA discussions, but largely what it was is the CFL telling the players, well, if we hit a record high revenue number, which the players obviously want to see them get to, but they aren't necessarily sure they can get there quickly, then the players want to be guaranteed some money outside of that. So the revenue sharing was critical because the Players Association went into this negotiation getting 22% of the revenues on the last CBA deal. That's less than half of what NHL players get, right? They're in and around the 50% mark for comparison. So the players needed to see that number come up. But more importantly, they needed to get an independent auditor in there to make sure the books they were looking at and being provided from the teams were on point. So that, to me, is the critical aspect. Yes, it does sound like that revenue number is going to go up in terms of the player's share, but it seems like it's actually a real number and not one being made up by the team. Sorry, fellas.
No worries.
But yeah, that's essentially the key part of the revenue sharing.
Stop breaking rules, man. Come on. Figure it out.
Yeah.
he says it's a train. It's a police officer telling him to get back
the megaphone
on the street.
Yeah.
Please, sir, can you stop drinking in public? Thank you.
Justin Dunk with us here on the Big Show.
Excuse me, sir. The waters are free. Don't be afraid to mix one in. Thank you.
That's a good tip, Will.
JD, a couple more on this CBA. Do we have do you have any idea what the numbers are going to look like salary cap wise for this? And I believe 7 year term, is that what we heard?
Yeah, 7 year term. That's what they've agreed upon. Now it's got to be ratified. So I haven't got the specific salary cap number. Again, that's where the real judgment or analysis will come when we get these hard figures. So you boys know when they're out there, where they'll be.
Yes, Three Down Nation is going to be right on that. And my last one about this, the CBA, I was interested in this one because, and I've heard a couple people talk about it now, they're implementing this this three nationalized Americans that are going to be permitted to rotate with national starters. Watch your step, JD. JD, just watch your step, okay?
Get off the yellow line, please. There's a train approaching. Get off the yellow line.
Justin, watch your step. try to explain this to me. Three nationalized Americans that are going to be allowed to rotate with national starters, provided they don't play more than 49% of total offensive or defensive snaps in a game. That sounds complicated to me. How do they enforce something like that?
Well, the Hamilton Tiger Cats were fined last year for breaking the ratio rules because they did not uphold to something similar. So this is going to be tracked by the league. But in my mind, it's going down a path here where the league clearly wants to lower the ratio. Now, there are arguments on both sides of this. Some people will say, well, it might benefit the CFL overall because the Canadian talent that then is left in the CFL is legitimate. Like the Canadians that are, dare I say, starring, like a Chase Claypool more and more in the NFL, then those guys have earned their spots. And there are other people on the other side that say, well, it's the Canadian Football League. There should be guaranteed Canadian jobs. So I think this is where the CFL is looking to go, is to trim that number down. But they're going to have to keep track of a lot of snap counts here and make sure teams don't go over that 49%.
He is Justin Dunk, our CFL insider from Three Down Nation, joining us to talk all things CFL. They've got a deal that's been agreed to, and players have been directed to report to camp. I believe, JD, there's been a couple of preseason games that have been affected by this, but nothing in terms of major. And we're not going to miss any time. It's going to be the first on-time season start since 2019, and we'll get to some training camp thoughts in just a second. But first off, in terms of the position you're most familiar with, we've talked to you a lot about him in the offseason. We wondered if he'd find a home in the NFL, but he was waived a couple of days ago. Anything you're hearing on a return to the Great White North for Chris Streveler?
Well, Streveler's going to play it patient in the NFL because there were multiple teams interested in him, and part of the reason that the Dolphins had signed him, at least for part of the offseason there, he would have been with the Dolphins for some of their, I forget what they call them, not OTAs, but sort of team-organized training down there in Miami. So they had tracked him since that 2019 year with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and liked him. So the fact that he had other NFL interest, to me, I think he's going to play it patient and not rush back to the CFL. He's going to exhaust his NFL options because if you're Streveler and you turn back to the CFL, it's not a bad thing overall because you could make some money, but you're telling the NFL that you don't necessarily believe that you can be on a roster. So I think to me, that's the key part of this with Streveler, is that he's been down there, he's seen a little bit of playing time. He was with the Cardinals first, then the Ravens, you know, spent part of this offseason with the Dolphins. So there's some interest there in what he can do, and he's shown athletically he can compete in the NFL. So I think that's where his focus is going to lie for now. If he came back north of the border, there would be multiple teams interested.
Well, and it kind of feels like, too, if he did come back, it would be almost like guaranteed starting spot, right? I mean, I, not to say that somebody, you know, would move a franchise quarterback out of the way to make room for Chris Streveler, but as you say, there would be plenty of teams interested, and he would have multiple in terms of playing opportunities or opportunities to get on the field immediately in the CFL.
He would, but I don't necessarily know if he would be stepping into a starting role, okay, especially if he missed training camp, right? You look across the league, Vernon Adams Jr., Trevor Harris in Montreal, Jeremiah Masoli, Ottawa, Dane Evans, Hamilton, McLeod, yeah, Bethel Thompson, Toronto, Zach Kalaros, Winnipeg, right? Obviously, Bo Levi Mitchell's in Calgary, Cody Fajardo, Saskatchewan. Edmonton might be the one spot if they're not settled on their quarterback situation. I don't think Jones likes any of the veterans they have anyways. And BC does have some young kids there, and Nathan Rourke getting his first go as a starter. But I don't think there's a spot necessarily where he would step in and be the guy, the one place where you could see it happen more quickly potentially would be with the Red Blacks because of Paul Appelese, but they've committed to Jeremiah Masoli $430,000+ in hard money to be their quarterback for this season. As much as Lapelise loves Streveler, and they could potentially move some things around on the cap, it's hard to see where he would jump in right away barring an injury other than potentially Edmonton.
Could get more in depth in terms of some of the training camp stories that might change your opinion on a team or two, but I just thought we could have some fun and spin around the league a little bit. Let's start in Calgary in terms of, you know, a team that I think last year, you know, just didn't really ever get in sync until the second half of the year. Everyone's used to the Stampeders being a top level team in the West Division. What's your gut tell you on the 2022 edition of the Calgary Stampeders?
It's an intriguing team, and it starts, obviously, as we know it, with Bo Levi Mitchell. How's the arm? How's the body? Is he rejuvenated and ready to go and back to feeling like himself? And he's been open. I believe he's talked with you guys about this, too, about, you know, having those thoughts of retirement if he can't play at the Bo Levi Mitchell caliber that we're all used to seeing him play at. So if he's at that or close to that CFL MLP caliber, then the Stamps are going to be the favorites to win the West because I like what they've done in terms of sort of remodeling the offensive line over the last few years after some of the veterans left from those Grey Cup teams. And they've got some intriguing pieces like a Cam Judge on defense who, if used properly, can be an absolute beast in this league. When he was with Saskatchewan, that dude was all over the field. And I think going to Toronto, it was a big city. It was a new start, new defense for him. He wasn't being used the same way as he was with the Rough Riders. So I think he could certainly be a ratio changer with the Stampeders. And you got some of those familiar targets coming back for Bo Levi Mitchell and Kadeem Carey there again, ran the rock so well last year that I think the Stamps are in a great position. And we know they've done their scouting and they'll find some gems and unearth some stars in training camp, I bet.
Always talk about what his impact is in terms of the headlines he makes, but what about on the field in terms of up the road in Edmonton? How long until we start to see some of the impact made by Chris Jones with this Elks team? Because if anybody who watches this league, even for, you know, loosely, and is not a diehard fan, you know, last season was a disaster for the Elks. So what's your thought on this year and kind of that immediate impact from Chris Jones?
I think right away they'll be competitive, because that's what Jones preaches every single day. It's what he's talked about at the quarterback position and why he doesn't or didn't want to have a number one guy going into training camp. And I think that mentality will quickly overtake the team in a positive way. You know, they're going to play defense first and really focus on that and not allowing teams to get into the end zone, especially at the rate they did a year ago against Edmonton. Now, part of that was the offense too, but I just think overall you'll see a more competitive team, and it might take a little bit for the wins to start coming there. And Edmonton has kind of a similar situation played out when he was in Saskatchewan. That first year was sort of a year to figure everything out and guys that he wanted to get in his system. And yes, he's got some veteran players, let's call it, like an Ed Gainey, that know his on defense for him that he's shown he's been able to pass.
And is I know we talked about him last time we had this conversation, but is Nick Arbuckle going to be a member of this team? Like, what's going on there with the in terms of the quarterback position?
So obviously the Stampeders and the Elks already in training camp, and from what I heard coming out of Edmonton was that you can just tell that the coaching staff there, for whatever reason, doesn't like Nick Arbuckle. Now, I think they're going to probably hold on to him as long as they can. And, you know, you hate saying this kind of stuff, but I'm sure the Elks are hoping there might be an injury to a quarterback in camp and a team needs a veteran guy, and then they can actually get something of substance for Arbuckle instead of a just bag of footballs. But it's honestly hard to see. I mean, training camp will tell a lot, and if the other guys don't look very good, then maybe they'll be forced to have Arbuckle on the team. But for whatever unknown reason, and the Elks are keeping tight-lipped on that, why they don't like Arbuckle, then it's hard to see him on the roster, barring something unforeseen.
He's Justin Dunk. Few more with him. Three Down Nation, CFL Insider, our guest on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960.
JD, surprised to see Charleston Hughes reunited with the Saskatchewan Roughriders?
What do you think about him?
Well, I was surprised to see him go back there. Were you?
Who was that?
Hughes.
Oh, Charleston.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a little surprising just from the standpoint of how things ended with the Rough Riders, because Hughes was pretty peeved at Jeremy O'Day, and O'Day did play it pretty cool. But O'Day was actually honest in saying that he didn't feel vindicated by Hughes going to Toronto and having a poor performance, at least stats-wise, and he wanted to bring Hughes back, but they just didn't see eye to eye on the value in terms of the dollar number on his contract. So from my standpoint, the fact that we've seen Hughes be a little bit quieter is probably something him and O'Day had a chat about, because that's how O'Day likes his players. He likes the so-called choir boys, let's say, like Cody Fajardo kind of leading the way out there. And I'm sure O'Day would have had a talk with Hughes and said, look, we're hosting the Grey Cup. We know you produced with us before in Jason Chavers' defense. You come back here, we'll put you in a pass rush role that we know you can be productive in. It'll benefit you, and it'll ultimately help Hughes on that sack chart. He's trying to get, I believe it is, inside the top five, and the Riders needed a veteran pass rusher. So to me, when you look at it after the signing has happened, it's not as surprising, because both sides sort of needed each other here.
How much pressure on Cody Fajardo and that group in SAS to get over that Western final hump that's, you know, admittedly, you know, running into Winnipeg in the last couple of years hasn't been a great recipe for anybody, but it feels as though that they're kind of hoping, especially with the Grey Cup and everything, that this will be the time they can break through.
Oh, dude, the pressure out there is palpable, my man. Like, as much as Craig Dickinson doesn't act like he feels it, and I honestly don't think he does, it's there. And I think Cody Fajardo is different in the sense, and he's talked about this a little bit, where he said, you know, put it all on me. But you better be careful, because those fans are assuming that you're going to beat Winnipeg and that you're going to host the Grey Cup at home, because the last time Saskatchewan hosted, Darren Durant had that cup at the middle of Old Mosaic Stadium and the Riders were celebrating a championship. So the fans, whether it's real or not, believe that that is going to be the outcome here. And I don't think Fajardo will completely realize that until the season gets going, and even more so until either they hit a rough patch or it looks like they're not the favorites to come out of the West. The pressure is absolutely massive. And put on top of that, this is the first Grey Cup that's going to be hosted at that shiny, it is still a new stadium, new Mosaic Stadium. So that adds to it even more.
And I'm curious about a similar situation as far as, you know, lack. I mean, not really lack of success, but, you know, the keys now fully handed over to Dane Evans in Hamilton. There's no more guessing game as to who the starting quarterback is for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. They've been in the Grey Cup against Winnipeg the last two times it was played. What's the feeling around them as they get, you know, training camp going for the first time in a long time without Masoli there?
That might be one of the most interesting or critical storylines in the East Division, I should say, because as much as Dane Evans has been this emerging quarterback the last couple seasons that have actually been played, he's never been the guy. It's been Jeremiah Masoli, and then Evans came in to replace him, obviously, after his ACL injury. And then Evans and Masoli going back and forth in 2021. So the Ticats always knew that that wasn't necessarily going to be the case, that they could keep both these guys at the salaries that they did have them up, because Evans took a discount, and I still don't understand why he signed a three-year deal. But that's the reason that they were able to stay together, is because he took a three-year deal, probably didn't understand the CFL landscape in that regard, and that led to them being together. So now it's going to be totally different with Evans as the guy, and for the Ticats overall, if Evans does struggle, they did sign Matt Schultz, and they like Jamie Newman, quarterback out of, I believe it's Vanderbilt, that they signed there to compete for one of the backup jobs. But this is on Evans now. There's nobody else there to help him, and more specifically, help him with things like game planning or in the film room or the weight room. I'm not saying Evans can't do those things, but he relied on Masoli so much, and those dudes were legitimately tight. They'll tell you they were as close as brothers when they were there in Hamilton, because they believed it was the best thing for them to do. So that, to me, I think is the most critical storyline. Can Evans handle being the number one dude?
Finally, I would ask you about the Red Blacks. We're running out of time, and I have more interest in the Argos in terms of a team that wins the offseason every single year. Like, talk about pressure, but, you know, this is a team that is, you know, kind of knocking on that door. We talk all the time about CFL football in Toronto. Even when they're in the big game, it doesn't seem to be, you know, much of an interest. But in terms of where the Argos are, the amount of big names they brought in the last couple of years, they take Corey Mace here from Calgary to Toronto. Just overall, big picture, your thoughts on this 2022 Argo team, who, again, you know, seem to be even better on paper than they were a year ago.
The Argos are certainly going to be competitive, and we got to remember they're the reigning East Division, what do we call them, regular season champions. Like, they hosted that East Final at BMO Field, and we all saw how it ended, the way that Dane Evans led the Ticats back in a really unprecedented way, and the Argos are feeling like they should have been in that Grey Cup in Hamilton, and they were arguably the only team to beat a full-throttle Blue Bombers team last year. So the Argos are sitting there thinking, well, we got Winnipeg's hometown running back now, and also a dude that they can back him up in the draft, Daniel Adeboboye, which was an underrated pick, I think, overall because of the time that Harris missed. And then you look at some of the weapons that they have in the Claude Bethel Thompson seems to be coming into his own. Tavares Daniels, you guys know what he did out there in Calgary. And then the defense looks like it's really strong and could be even better under the new coordinator there. So I think the Argos at least have to start the season as the favorite to win the East.
Excuse me, sir. There's a bathroom in your car. Please don't pee in your cup. Thank you.
We'll keep it in there.
I love it. Justin, great stuff, man. We will talk to you again as we get closer to the season, but this is a nice palate cleanser, and for our listeners, probably a nice diverge and get away from hockey for a little bit. So thanks for jumping on today. We'll do this again soon, pal. As always, appreciate it, and safe travels wherever you're heading on that crazy train.
Hey, you bet, boys. Going down to San Diego, I always got time for you wherever I am in the world, so hit me up.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Bye for now.
There he is, Justin Dunk, Three Down Nation CFL insider, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 13-time Consumer Choice Award winner. You can check him out tonight for Dine-In, 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or I'll give him a call for takeout and delivery, 403-248-3344. We'll get back to hockey a little bit here in the next, I would say, 20-25 minutes. Coming up at 3 o'clock, we'll stay away from hockey again. For, 90% of the conversation. But, of course, it is Thursday, which means at 3 o'clock. And to kick off Hour 3, we talk with Adnan Virk of MLB and NHL Network. The Blue Jays, a little bit of a dip in their season. We'll see where he is on the Blue Jays through a month and a half of the 2022 season. Plus, I would give Logan some time. I think he wants to go in-depth on the Bob's Burgers movie. I'm not sure, but I think that's probably top of your list. Hey, Logs?
Bob's what?
Bob's Burgers.
Bob's Burgers.
Can't remember what their slogan is. No, something about buns, I think.
I would imagine.
That's top of your list, right? You'll be going
opening
night.
I don't know if I will be.
Are you a Bob's Burgers guy?
I'm not.
Were you a Simpsons movie guy?
I watched The Simpsons. I did see The Simpsons. I haven't gotten into Bob's Burger. Maybe I would be, but I can't say that I am right now.
Can't say that you've watched a lot of episodes?
No.
Aaron's got a Bob's Burgers tattoo on his chest.
I thought that was a Scooby-Doo tattoo.
I think
tattoo.
He'll be, oh, jeez. Oh, boy.
I didn't think it was on his chest.
An absolute drive-by by Logan Gordon and very inside baseball. We will take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Hour 2 of The Big Show rolls on with Scooby-Doo and friends. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This is The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour 2 rolls on. Welcome back to the program. It's Will Nault and Logan Gordon. Happy Thursday. Everybody calm down a little bit. 9-6 Circus last night. Or are we still wired? I don't know what we can expect now in Game 2. The only thing And again, it's maybe even something you don't necessarily want to take to the bank because you're not completely sure. But I think we'll see a little more structure, a little more defensive structure in particular in Game 2. I'm not saying we're going to see a 1-0 game, but I don't know if we'll see 15 goals again. I should say, or should mention, that every regular season meeting between these two teams this year averaged 8 goals. So... yeah, there's a potential. If you're betting on this series, and again, if you're betting, be smart and be safe. But if you're betting on this series, I would suggest that there's probably better money, or you're certainly going to have more success betting the over as opposed to the under, no matter what that number is, 6.5, 7.5, whatever it is. I think you're probably pretty safe to bet the over in this series. I'm not necessarily as sure on the winner. But in terms of goals, yeah, I think there's going to be some. I just don't think there's going to be 15 again at any point in this series. I've mentioned a couple of times, it is just after 2:30. We did this in round number one. We're doing it again in round number two, hour two of the show. But round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs, your chance to win your way into the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. It's time for your next code word.
Do you want to sit lower bowl at the Saddle Dome to see your Calgary Flames? Here's your Flames playoff code word.
Playoff code word for today. If you want to be at Game 2 tomorrow night, get your texting fingers ready. 960-960, first and last name on the text. Today's code word is Johnny. 960-960, first and last name on the text. If you enter the correct code word, you're in the draw and have potential to be at Game 2. Friday, we'll announce the winner on this program just after 1 o'clock tomorrow. Give you a lot of time to make your way to the Dome, make your plans, find who you're going to go to the game with, maybe break it to your wife or your husband that you're not taking them. I don't know how that conversation would go, but maybe, you know, got a few hours to think about it.
It's a gentle conversation.
Honey, I'm taking our son. That's probably going to go over better than I'm taking my friend.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I'll give you a few hours to think about what you're going to say to whoever. You've got to let off the ledge a little bit easy in terms of, hey, you're not coming to game two with me. I'm taking taking John instead. Sorry about that. You know what? Maybe phone Pinder for advice. I think he's probably pretty good at that.
I thought...
he's got a hall pass for a lot in terms of just, yeah, go. Go to the game. Don't worry about your children. Go ahead. So maybe you want to call Pinder. He'd probably give you some good advice. He's always at events without his wife, it feels like. No?
I don't know. I don't know.
You're no commenting the situation very well.
Well, I don't know.
No, it's fine.
I think there are events. I'm sure there are events she's at.
It's fine. You don't want to be part of the Pinder slander. It's fine. You do you. Before we go to 3 o'clock and have a great chat with Adnan Virk, I should mention this. It'll be in headlines again coming up. But Daryl Sutter today named a finalist for the Jack Adams. This is about as slam dunk as it gets. And he was asked about that today in the off day between Games 1 and Game 2.
Not the best coach, first off. Right? If the coaches voted on the best coach every year, you'd see quite a bit different list the last 15 years. So the way I look at it is that I don't need that on my resume. Some guys do. So I'd rather see young guys win it, quite honest. Or guys that have maybe got a raw deal somewhere, like a guy like Girard. Got a raw deal in Florida, got a raw deal in Vegas. Oh, if I had a vote, I know who I'd vote for.
If he had a vote, he'd know who he would vote for. Gerard Gallant, raw deal in Florida, raw deal in Vegas. Gerard Gallant and Andrew Brunette, the other finalist for the Jack Adams. Of course, Brunette winning the President's Trophy with the Florida Panthers, and Gerard Gallant guiding the Rangers to the postseason and second in the Metro in his first year behind the bench. I know Daryl Sutter took over the team last year, so it is a little bit murky. But the NHL release indicating today, Logan, I believe the second time ever that all three finalists for the Jack Adams are in their first season with their team. Obviously, Daryl Sutter has coached the Flames before. So again, it's a little bit murky. He also coached last year, Gallant and Brunette. Yes, Brunette was on Quenneville's staff, but he was not head coach last year. So, sure.
Yeah, it's a bit...
It's a bit murky.
It's a bit odd, let's be honest. And all three of them, now this doesn't reflect on the actual award itself and when it was voted on, but all three of them still coaching.
Still alive.
Their team's still going, so point to their success this year, and I would be pretty surprised if Daryl didn't win it. I think they're all deserving. I didn't expect Daryl to come out and say, yeah, I can't wait to go up there and make a long-winded speech and talk about personal awards because that's all I ever do. But yeah, it's still cool. Very deserving. So cool to see those three get the nod today.
Well, and I mean, again, hindsight's always 20/20. We're not, certainly not making those decisions for them. I know it's been out there a little bit, certainly today after the announcement that he's a finalist for the Jack Adams. Vegas regret firing him, do you think? Or
I would. I mean, I thought that whole situation, I don't know if it started the whole
hatred towards Vegas.
I don't know if it was the hatred. I was leaning more towards the whole reputation that they've been building about loyalty and sort of, you know, I think that's a move that can rub guys in that locker room the wrong way. I mean, he didn't miss the playoffs as the head coach of the team. He was, I think, liked by a lot of people now. And to go to DeBoer, right? A guy that they had heated playoff battles against when he was the coach of San Jose, right? I mean, I think that to me was one of those moves that Vegas has been prone to where they see something they like and they make that snap decision to go out and get it, regardless of the fallout, right? Oh, okay, Alex Pietrangelo's out there. We are signing Alex Pietrangelo no matter what it costs. We're going to give him 8 years, whatever number he needs. If we got to move three guys out to do it, we're doing it. Right? To me, it's that kind of move. And
well, and I think the Marc-Andre Fleury situation added greatly to that.
Yes, I absolutely think that that's
true. I think
true.
That might be number one. If you were to look at the entire list as to, again, hate's such a strong word, but reasons for those that dislike Vegas, I would suggest that Marc-Andre Fleury is very high on that list in terms of the treatment towards him from owner Bill Foley saying, you're going to retire a Golden Knight, we'll never trade you, don't worry. And what was it, like not even a month later, he was traded to the Chicago Blackhawks. So I do think that that is going to be high on, and it's because also, I mean, don't care who you cheer for, it's kind of hard to dislike Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, he seems like a beloved teammate everywhere he's been. He's beloved by media who have covered him, obviously by fans who have had him in their city. And again, even fans of rivals. I think Marc-Andre Fleury is a guy that a lot of people find themselves rooting for. So that was a story that I think left a sour taste in a lot of mouths. And, you know, certainly what Vegas did, you know, even with Gerard Gallant, who was loved by that fan base and by those players. I think those two things are very high up.
Yeah, there. It's the same profile of move.
For sure. For sure.
That, you know,
yeah,
good wasn't good enough, and we weren't waiting around to see if you could get to good enough. We were moving on with our guy.
You mentioned Daryl Sutter. Is that because you're closest to it, or do you think that he does have the best case to win it?
I would think suggest, he has the best case.
Yeah, I would suggest that Gallant is there as well, and I also think that, you know, if I was to look at it, I also think Daryl wins it, but I think Andrew Burnett is probably right there. I think those are the 1-2 for me. I think Gallant would be third, and that's not to suggest that he's not a great coach. He won the award in 2018. Daryl just talked about it. It's not necessarily the best coach who wins it, but it's always the story. I wouldn't say that it comes out of nowhere, but I don't think anybody, even the most optimistic Flames fans, didn't have the Flames winning the Pacific, having 50-plus wins. I think there was some that had the glass half full approach that thought, okay, this is a team that's going to compete for a playoff spot. And, you know, they might make the playoffs, but I don't see them winning the division. Everyone had Vegas Edmonton as the top two teams in the division. So I think just based on that, and again, I know Florida went through some dysfunction, certainly with the Quenneville situation and Brunette stepping in. I give them a lot of credit, and they had a fabulous season. They won the President's Trophy, but I think the expectations were already that high in Florida. So for those reasons, and usually the way that this voting has kind of shaken down in the past or shook down in the past, I do think that Daryl Sutter is the ultimate winner. But that's how I would have them. I'd have Sutter, Brunette, Gerard Gallant.
Yeah, let's be honest. The Jack Adams Award, and I like how Pat usually puts this.
Easy now.
Is the Jack Adams Award doesn't always go to the best coach. It goes to the coach who exceeded expectations the most with their group.
100%.
Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to a good coach, because I think Daryl Sutter's done a tremendous job, but I also think of all three of these teams, where they were last year and where everybody was thinking about what their season might be, you know, in September and October. I think that that statement is still true about Daryl Sutter's group, that they exceeded expectations the most out of New York and Florida. Like, you're right, Florida, I think everybody had them competing for a playoff spot. This was a time for them to go for it. A President's Trophy is great, but I think that's closer to what people expected from Florida compared to where the Flames ended up and where we thought they would be. The Brunette one's interesting, too, because I've seen some people who say it wasn't a full season for him. I don't know how much that plays into it. I think he did a tremendous job.
Close.
It is very close. To
like,
me,
we're not
it's
talking about a guy who coached 30 games.
No. And I'm not in that camp. I've seen that. That's all I'm saying. As I've seen that, I don't buy it because I think it's incredibly tough to
he He coached 75 of 82.
Yeah, so seven games for Quenneville, or
they were seven
six,
or no
maybe.
When Quenneville. They were seven or no.
Because there was that weird game. Yeah, so expectations or not, I still think having everything that happened with Chicago and the fallout leading into Quenneville losing, I think that's tough. I still think that that's as good as the team is for you to lose your head coach after training camp and after, what, 2 weeks of the season? For have Andrew Burnett say, here, by the way, we have Stanley Cup aspirations this year. I know you're an assistant, but if you could just go out and fulfill the job that that guy was going to do, that'd be great. That's not easy. I know it's a great team, but I also don't think it's easy to step into those shoes.
No, especially knowing the resume for Quenneville.
Well, exactly. And I mean, Andrew Burnett's not stupid. He's got to sit there and go, wow, I've never been an NHL head coach, and now I've got to take this team further than they've ever been. I've got to get them through a first round that they haven't been through since the 90s. And that's all on my shoulders. I didn't get to run the training camp and do things my way. Mm-hmm. I was an assistant in all of this. I think that's a tremendous job done by him. I think Gerard Gallant has always been a good head coach. I tend to agree with Daryl Sutter's perspective on it, that he did get a raw deal, especially in Vegas. But far as the terms of how this trophy is voted on, and we've had the conversations pretty much every single time about every trophy this year and the sort of individual nuances that go into voting and who actually wins the trophy, exceeding expectations is what does it. And I think Daryl's group did that more than the other two.
Agreed. And again, maybe it's because we're closest to it, but I do think that the feeling is the same around the hockey world. You just saw when the nominees were announced today, or the finalists were announced today. There wasn't a ton of surprise from anybody that, you know, A, Daryl was in it, and B, that those were the three. But I do think the feeling is the same in regards to Daryl and where he might sit on that list. Elsewhere, it appears, a couple of days after getting an interview in Winnipeg, Barry Trotz interviewing in Philadelphia, according to reports, today for the Flyers head coaching spot. We said this when he got the interview in Winnipeg, Logan. I didn't think it was going to be the only team he interviewed for unless the Jets offered him a contract and a blank check right there and then on the spot. But no surprise, there's a lot of interest in Barry Trotz, and we don't know what the Vegas situation is with him ultimately. But so far, interviews in Winnipeg and Philadelphia, and I do like the fit for both. I just think the story of the Manitoba native going back to Winnipeg is cool, so why I'm leaning towards the Jets.
Yeah, I'm not as surprised that he took job interviews here. I think it's for leverage and for a number of different reasons. It's smart to do that and smart to see what's out there. Honestly, if I'm Barry Trotz, I have no interest in going to Philadelphia. The mess that team is in right now, the money that they have to guys that I just don't, letting go of Claude Giroux, which they had to do. I don't know if I'm Barry Trotz after all the success I've had in the last couple of years. You've had good runs with New York. You won a Stanley Cup with Washington. You want to walk into that situation with Philadelphia? I don't know. And I mean, maybe he's up for the challenge, but I think that's as big a challenge as he's going to find on the open market. I mean, even if you want to have the conversation about Detroit, I still think Detroit's on more of an upswing and building towards being a contender than Philly is right now. You know, Winnipeg, yes, bad season, but still I think in a position to contend and, you know, be in that playoff conversation, that division. I don't see it from Philly. I wouldn't want anything to do with that job right now. Especially as an established NHL coach with a GM.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the hill or mountain is a little steeper.
Does it not? Like it really,
and talk about pressure. I know that one's a Canadian market, and certainly in any Canadian market you're going to feel pressure, but Philadelphia is not an easy city to work or be a part of a sports team, at least certainly not from afar, it feels like. And you talk to people from that city. I mean, Frank Saravelli says it best. The saying in Philly is, we hate everybody. There's no one city we hate more or one person we hate more. We hate everybody. So, I think there's maybe a little bit more pressure there, especially because they have been bad for a few years, and it feels like everyone wants them to take that next step. just hasn't worked out for him. So, yeah, in terms of the pressure, not to say there's none in Winnipeg, because there will be, especially for a Manitoba native, but I would think Barry Trotz.
Well, and this text comes in 960. Well, Boudreaux did it in Vancouver. Yeah, but Bruce Boudreaux isn't the coach that Barry Trotz is. Like, Boudreaux is a good coach, but I don't think Bruce Boudreaux had the options that Barry Trotz has available to him. Like, Barry Trotz has a Stanley Cup ring, has had lots of good years, minus this year in New York, which had a bunch of asterisks to it. I just don't see Bruce Boudreaux and Barry Trotz as
what
the
did,
same.
What did he do in Vancouver? I'm confused.
Well, I think turn around a team on a downswing.
But they didn't make the playoffs, so he didn't really turn them around. Well, and do you think they're going to make the playoffs
good,
next year?
No, I mean, good record while they were there.
And look it, I'm not saying that you can't do it in Philadelphia, but again, even looking at the rosters on paper, I would suggest there's more young talent that's a little more attractive in Vancouver than in Philadelphia, but ultimately, they still didn't make the playoffs.
No, and I also, again, I think Barry Trotz is a better coach than Bruce Boudreaux. That guy's got a Stanley Cup ring and a lot of winning behind
him. And there's
him.
A good text that comes in. Trotz is interviewing those teams, not the other way around. I mean, he kind of does feel like he has the pick of the litter, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, I wouldn't. If I had an open coaching vacancy, it'd be the first guy I'd call.
Especially knowing he's a free agent. Obviously, when he's employed by somebody, you can't make that call. But yeah, right now, if you got a vacancy, you're probably, you know, Trotz's phone line's burning right now. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I'd be worried if my GM didn't call him, to be honest.
Well, we got a Philadelphia Flyer fan coming up next. We'll see where he's at on Barry Trotz or how attractive that job is. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nalte. I saw a couple of texts that come in. We mentioned the code word for the giveaway for the Game 2 tickets. You can text in Bacardi, but you're not going to win the tickets. I saw the text in that came in and said Bacardi. Be listening to Flames Talk as they will prompt you to text in Bacardi during the Flames' spiciest moment. It's brought to you by Bacardi Spiced Rum, a spicy moment every single day. And then every Friday, your chance to win a prize pack courtesy of our friends at Bacardi. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nalt. We'll take a break. Come back. Kick off Hour 3 with Adnan Verk next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.